What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings podcast. I'm your host, Nate Liss. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And of course, with me is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. All right, Alexander, I think this is the second official episode of this podcast. Different than the podcast for those of you that are currently on the network, this is more of the flagship podcast. This is the one where you're going to hear a lot more advanced analysis as we roll out our tools, as our rankings become available, as some of our algorithm-related items start to roll out, we'll be able to research and use some of those a lot more on these episodes. So this will be a much more advanced version of a show relative to the other one that you can find on this network, which is called Future Proof, which is a little bit of foreshadowing for something in the future. I don't want to tip too much of the hand on this one just yet, but the Future Proof show, which you guys can find dropping every Sunday a.m., is going to be very sleeper-oriented. It's going to be talking about trades. It's going to be looking at trending players. It's going to be a lot of dynasty strategy. So sleeper plus dynasty kind of all in one. And for those of you that are on Spotify or watching this on YouTube, you guys are going to get the cool graphics and stuff like that. So for those of you that are on Apple and maybe Google, where you're not getting the video, you can check it out on YouTube, or you can go get a Spotify subscription like a regular human being and enjoy it with everybody else that's enjoying this show currently. But anyways, Alexander, welcome back. second podcast. Now, yeah. We haven't dove into a lot of your backstory just yet, but maybe this would be a good opportunity to kind of tell people a little bit about how you and I linked up. Because for the people that don't know, Alexander and I have been working together for, what, 7-8 months at this point? Is that right?
It might be longer than that, I think. At this point, it might be a year. I don't know. We're kind of closing up on that, but yeah.
Roughly
a year, I'd say, at this point, yeah.
Yeah, I undershoot the estimates pretty consistently, but I was at a point where I had kind of gone to go my own direction, for people that know my backstory. And I was working on a website, and obviously with what we're doing, for those of you that are familiar, it's pretty advanced stuff from a coding standpoint, from a formulaic standpoint. There's a lot that goes into this. This isn't just names on a list that are being filtered up and down. There's a lot of reasoning and math and study that goes behind this. And I was previously working with a software engineer on it, had a little bit of a falling out, and I was kind of in this space where I couldn't do this on my own. And it was about that time that Alexander hit me up in the DMs and said, "Hey man, I've been a fan of your content in the past. And he can tell you more about it. I'm a full stack software engineer. And if you're looking for any help, I'd love to, do what I can to help you work on the projects that you have." And I would say for a couple of weeks, I kind of didn't engage, and I might've hit you up and you could tell this side of the story, but eventually, when I did hit Alexander up and everything was revealed, I realized that there was a lot more to what Alexander brought to the table. And that's part of the reason why he's not only one of the major parts of this tool and this system that you guys are going to experience in the future, but also through many of our conversations, I realized this is probably somebody that can be a lot more than even what they think they can be today. I mean, this is, again, the difference between what you do and the other engineer. You love football. You play fantasy football. Yeah. You're married to this like I am. And that interest and, that draw that you had is another big reason why this is working out. But is that close to what happened? Am I missing something?
That's pretty close. Yeah, I was always a big fan of your show, The Sonic Truth. Been listening to it for years, in the car. Just like our listeners now, in the same facet. I was like, man, I just felt like I was already, I was already having these conversations. I always thought about these things, especially in the dynasty space. I love fantasy football. I love football, if you can't tell, with all the Chiefs gear and stuff here in the back. I'm a big listener of the show for a long, long time. I got slid in your DMs, and it was like, "Hey, I heard you're working on a project. I've got this background. I work in data engineering. I also write some application software. Can we figure something out? You need any help?" And man, I still can't believe it right now. It just feels so weird just sitting here and being able to, do this kind of stuff is just freaking awesome. I love this stuff. I think about this all the time. Messaged you all the time about this kind of stuff and stats, and it just adds, it's just so much fun. And I hope that everyone that's listening to the show and all the new followers that we get enjoy this as well, because this kind of stuff is just, it's just exciting stuff, and it's very interesting. You know, it's just the ways of thinking about things that you never thought about, and you make connections on stuff, and there's just a huge community that you have already built up that's pretty incredible. That, you know, all the, I just go in there into the Discord and just see all the discourse that's just going on in there, and all the relationships that people have already established. It's just pretty incredible stuff. But yeah, no, I'm excited to, we've been working really hard on building this algorithm to kind of, you know, read through all these players' information, and I'm excited for what the future holds, and excited to, you know, talk about some of these topics that we got going on today.
Yeah. So again, I'm super happy for the people that have been following the saga of my content creation era. Again, we're really close, and we're excited to roll this out. And there's some things that we're working on in tandem, some really big releases that'll be at the website. That's dynastyrankings.com. You guys can go sign up, plug your email in over there. But there's really big stuff coming in the future, so we will get into more of that. I don't want to spend the first 47 minutes of this episode going through our story, so we're gonna, you know, we're gonna micro dose the backstory of you and I little by little. So for now, I want to kind of jump into some hot topics on this episode. And guys, again, as things roll out, there's going to be a lot more advanced data. And I know you guys are used to the term advanced data, but the stuff that Alexander and I are working on and some of the things that we have access to that we plan to implement into our analysis feels like advanced data to me. It's stuff that rarely gets talked about, and we hope to lean into information that we can verify and vet correlates to fantasy points per game or correlates to a point that we're trying to make, not just wildly claiming that target separation indicates X. If it can't be proved, it's something we want to attempt to avoid. Obviously, theory exists, but we're trying to stay very binary. That's one of our greatest goals, so that when you guys listen to this episode and you go parrot something to your friends, you don't have to worry about looking ridiculous one day because it was an inaccurate, non-vetted statement. That's not what we plan to do over here. So, with that being said, Jonathan Taylor, now just a few days ago, you and I were building this show sheet, and it was basically, the title of the section was Jonathan Taylor's Landing Spots, and funny enough, it ended up being the exact same place that he was already with the Indianapolis Colts. So with Jonathan Taylor in Dynasty, we know that there's obviously issues with the contract situation. We know that there seems to be a somewhat undisclosed injury situation that might also be looming, whether it's rehab concerns or something that's lingering, you know, other issues that are going on in the background. We could see the GM of the Colts kind of alluding to this as well. Also, the fact that no trade partner could really be finalized with. So what's your take on Jonathan Taylor? And then we'll kind of get into maybe what we're doing with him in Dynasty.
My take on Jonathan Taylor is I was really wanting him to get out of there. I think he deserves the money. He's an extremely talented running back in this league. I think he's proven it time and time again, especially that year when he led the league in rushing. He's still, you know, he's approaching 25. It's unfortunate, you know, that he has to stick in this situation, because it seems like it can either go two ways. He just holds out the rest of the season, or he comes back after his stint on the PUP, or this injury thing is actually legit and he's kind of lingers a little bit more. So I wish that he would have gone to somewhere like the Miami Dolphins, which maybe it sounded too good to be true. That wide open spaces with Tyreek and Jalen Waddle opening it up for him. But in terms of his dynasty stock, I feel like it kind of goes down at this point, just because it may be that he holds out the entire year. That's what it seems like it's going to be, unless he kind of changes his mind and maybe sticks with the team and plays out the rest of his contract. In terms, again, it feels like it kind of hurts him, either way. I think him going to a new team and kind of jumping and starting out and going to, you know, Dolphins, Bears were listed. I mean, Eagles, that would be a nightmare. But in terms of advanced metrics, I think it's just like we all know what he is, right? He's an elite runner, three down skill set, an electric breakaway runner, great size, great speed, 4.39. I mean, come on. It's really just like what has his evaluation look like long term, right? I think ideally he kind of gets out of here and goes to a team that he actually wants to go play for, and they pay him the money that he feels like he deserves. And then we kind of still kind of evaluate him maybe in sort of the way we evaluate Saquon Barkley right now. And maybe he stays within this range for a little bit. But if he goes anywhere where it's kind of a messy backfield with another pretty talented running back, that it just makes his stock go down significantly just because of the opportunity will be lessened.
I mean, yeah, high ankle sprains, rolled ankles, his year last year was very diminished. Quarterback play was not at an all-time high, despite a lot of opportunity that he was given. So it's this compounding issue where Jonathan Taylor didn't look like Jonathan Taylor, and the injuries added up, and the team wasn't good. And you get all these things going together, and what that equates to, as you can see over here on the other screen, is that Jonathan Taylor now is viewed as the RB7 in Dynasty, which to me, he's neck and neck with Nick Chubb, but he's 3 years younger than Nick Chubb, and he's a better receiver than Nick Chubb is. And the end of Taylor's career likely isn't with the Colts. Now, you had mentioned that we don't know what happens with him in Indianapolis if he plays at all this year. I do know that going on the PUP means that those games still count towards an accrued season. So no matter what, his contract will run out at the end of 2023. We can pull it up right here. So end of 2023, that contract is up. Unrestricted free agent, so he can kind of go and do what he wants at that point. And I know that the Colts were, air quote, trying to get something for him. They really should have, unless they thought that they could mend this thing. But you look at his value, he's essentially approaching like Josh Jacobs level value. And to be honest with you, I never thought in 1,000 years those two players would be anywhere near each other, because Jacobs is all recency bias. I mean, I like Jacobs. You like Jacobs, but it's one super big year where everything came together. And now you have Jonathan Taylor, who's not only a year younger, but had prolific production up until an injured year with absolute trash around him. And it's like Taylor is a buy at this point. Like, if you need a running back, if you want a guy, if you want to bet on a running back that could play till the Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, Adrian Peterson type, you know, structure level of game, like, it wouldn't surprise you or I if at 28.5, approaching 29, Taylor is still a 1,000-yard rusher in this league effectively. So with that being said, it's the rare case where a guy like that is finally falling into a value position where he is a buy. You're just going to have to eat what 2023 likely is.
Oh yeah. Especially, I mean, again, he's already proven what he is. He's an elite running back in this league, right? Health concerns are valid, but they all happened last year. And again, his efficiency is also every player's efficiency is tied to the efficiency of the offense that they're on, the offensive line, the quarterback, and all the supporting cast on that team, contributes to how well, you know, he could play. And if they're loading the box against him and he's got an ankle injury that he's trying to play through, what are you going to do? You know, like, they're not trusting the quarterback, Matt Ryan. Sam Ehlinger was out there at some point. It was a pretty abysmal offense for a team that had a lot of hype with Matt Ryan being traded over there last year. With that being said, again, I think he goes somewhere else. And again, I think he sustains his value. It just feels like the way it was with sort of Saquon when he got hurt. His efficiencies went down. He was playing while he was hurt. Everyone's just down on just, again, recency bias. What happens if, like, you know, he's approaching that Josh Jacobs role? What if Jacobs just kind of has what he has had prior to this insane league leading rushing year? And then again, his interpretation completely changes as well. But yeah, you're right. I think he moves on from this team. It's evident. And he goes to a team that kind of hopefully appreciates him more than the Indianapolis Colts do.
Yeah. And he will. And he's going to end up somewhere great. And like everybody else before him that had this level of talent, that had a situation change, whether it was even a guy on the same team and then a quarterback entered the situation and suddenly they became more valuable. That's what we could see with Taylor. And even last year, Taylor was still top 14 in the league in yards created after contact, right next to guys like Kenneth Walker. So on a bum leg or bum ankles, like he's right there with Kenneth Walker, a guy that everybody thinks is so explosive and so bursting, is going to relegate Zach Charbonnet to holding his helmet in his hands on the sidelines for 17 games next year. He was still right in that range. So I have a lot of guys hit me up on Discord and privately on Patreon, and they ask me, like, what should I do with Jonathan Taylor? And for me, it's like, hold. Unless a treasure trove is coming your way, he's 24 and a half. Yes, technically he's getting older, but he's so elite. 1 year is not going to make a difference for this guy. Like, he's that good. And I'm not concerned for Taylor. So with that being said, though, I saw questions on some other shows like, what are you selling Taylor for, you know, relative to upcoming classes or players? It would have to be in super flex. I mean, we're talking, it's got to be close to a top five, top six pick. Like, I have to essentially be selling Taylor for the chance to get another top potential running back in next year's class, or give me the pick of a wide receiver that might be there. Like, I need to essentially swap and have sort of a semi-lateral reset where, I can either get the running back, or maybe that pick has the potential to ascend even a little more. If it's projected 105, 106, maybe it ends up 104, 103, which is even sweeter. If we're looking at guys like that and rookie picks. In terms of players, though, I think it's still a case where you need a running back in return, right? If you're going to trade Taylor.
Absolutely. Because up until this point, we had this conversation about running backs. Few days ago, maybe about a week ago, we were talking about how the production has gone down compared to these target hog wide receivers. But initially, some of these people have been building their teams around players like Jonathan Taylor, right? They felt great. Like you said, I think we talked about it in the last pod, man, it wasn't unreachable to get Jonathan Taylor in any other, in any dynasty format. You obviously have to get a running back in return and then some. Whether it be picks, or whether it be another high valuable player, I guess maybe we were more we value him more than others. But I think the one positive note that you can take away from the whole thing is if he moves away from Indianapolis, if this is run centric with Anthony Richardson, he may not have the target share that he had while he was here with these statue quarterbacks. With Matt Ryan, with Carson Wentz, he could easily go to another team that will actually use him in the receiving game. And then that outlook, he continues that three down profile. Because if he goes somewhere like the Bears, he goes to if he stays in Indianapolis, I don't see his target share being the way it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, and the Colts in the last 2 years have had a over 21% running back target rate, which has been basically top 12 in the league. So, which is very high, well over 100 targets annually to the running back position. So that's incredibly hard to come by. So I think that's the takeaway. If you've got him, hold. If you're looking to sell, it's got to be a top five range, super flex type pick next year, somewhere in that. If you're looking to sell for players, you have to get a running back with some time left on his contract, please. In that deal, not one of these guys that goes Miles Sanders, on a second contract where they're questionable what's going to happen beyond that. Okay, so from Jonathan Taylor, moving on to an interesting one, is Trey Lance still a player worth targeting and chasing in Dynasty? Because for those of you that, again, I've made this reference before, have been living under a rock, or maybe you live like a recluse out in the woods and you only come into town to check your phone like once every week, you probably didn't know. News break. Trey Lance ended up going to the Dallas Cowboys, formerly a third overall pick that cost the San Francisco 49ers numerous first round picks in the future. He now goes for a fourth round future pick to the Dallas Cowboys, and they put him behind a 30-year-old Dak Prescott, who I have spent an entire offseason professing my love for. So, Trey Lance, what's the realistic scenario here now?
Realistic. I mean, you can hold on to him hoping that something happens, but like we talked about, Dak is probably going to get an extension. They were talking to it prior to this fourth round trade. with the 49ers in Dallas. I just don't see, other than, I mean, Dak has had an injury history. But again, Cooper Rush is there now in the immediate future. If some craziness happens, you know, with the Cowboys, where they, both of these guys get hurt and then Trey Lance is coming in, then we'll have a better idea maybe who Trey Lance is. But as of right now, we don't even know who Trey Lance is. He played only 13 games in college, and he's only played 8 games total in his career. So is he good? I don't know. Like, there's you can make the argument, if you looked at Trevor Lawrence after 1 year, that, oh, I don't know if he's that good. Well, Urban Meyer kind of ruined him, and he was just also getting acclimated to the league. Now all of a sudden, look at what his value is on keep trade cut. I think it's hard because I don't see him ever seeing the field unless a Dak Prescott injury. You kind of allude to some of the other videos that you've made about Dak. Dak is, you know, always high in pass attempts and efficiency metrics. He's got a great supporting cast. It's hard for him to fail in this offense with Tony Pollard, with you know, CeeDee Lamb. He's got Brandon Cooks. With that being said, if there's crazy injuries that happen to Dak, then yeah, but you're banking on an injury, and we've already talked about this. You can't predict injury. Don't be banking on that thought process. If you have the ability to stash him, but it's not going to be one of those situations that he's going to take Dak's job.
There's no way.
Dak's too good. I think Dak doesn't get enough respect because, you know, there's this bias against the Cowboys because they have the big media presence and stuff like that.
Yes.
But in a vacuum, Dak Prescott is an extremely talented quarterback in fantasy football and just in real life. So,
thank you.
What are you going to do? It's one of those things where you have to admit it and then realize that, okay, that's the situation. And then go from there. The stats speak for themselves with Dak.
I mean, and I had to, even to this day, it's almost September, and I still have to remind people when they're like, oh, Dak Prescott, you see his interception rate went up last year. It's like, he had a fractured thumb on his throwing hand. Prior to that, he's got one of the lowest interception rates in the NFL. Also, the guy borders on a 70% completion percentage year over year while throwing for over 4,000 yards. This is a guy that had 27, almost 28 points per game 1 year before that significant injury. MVP level season was incoming. He's only 30 years old, and we've talked about this on other shows. That is like right in the heart of the prime for quarterbacks. Like, I would say the prime nowadays is trending out of 33, age 34, kind of getting into where Russ, Kirk Cousins are in Dynasty too, where I don't just mean the prime for production. I mean the prime for where you start to question their value in Dynasty. A 33-year-old quarterback, you still have some confidence in. 34 is where we start to kind of trend the other way a little bit in terms of how we feel about a quarterback. 36 is no man's land at this point. And I don't know how many quarterbacks in the league are 36 at this point, but we've seen very few kind of push past that point effectively. I mean, even Matt Ryan, you kind of watch the tail end of his career, Philip Rivers, tail end of his career, Big Ben, tail end of his career. Like, not everybody's Tom Brady, not everybody's Aaron Rodgers. With that being said, though, Dak's phenomenal. Back to Trey Lance and his hairline. I think that, awful picture, by the way. I think that he could have some potential to start with an injury, but he'll never take the job, as you alluded to. The one thing, though, and we were kind of talking about this pre-show, is that they can take the fifth-year option on him in the future. They still have control of this rookie deal. And this did bug Dak Prescott a little bit because there was conversations about how Dak Prescott's extension or a future contract was coming, and they were going to be working on this, and then this happened. So with that being said, you could chase Trey Lance in Dynasty if you'd like, but the reality of the situation is if Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys want to hold on to him and just have him as a really high upside backup that they got for around less than what was paid for Malik Willis, then so be it. They can do that, and he never really sees the field short of an injury. He would be electric on any given game, but you can't possibly roster a guy like this with the hopes that he's going to play 2 games a year or 4 games a year after sitting on the sidelines for a majority of the season. So that's the take on Trey Lance. This is not the greatest situation in the world. in addition to that not being the greatest situation in the world, it would also feel like not the greatest situation in the world if you rostered one of these two veterans. But as we've seen with the Jonathan Taylor situation, as we've seen with Dalvin Cook, who already signed somewhere, and we know injuries are going to come. It happens annually. Sometimes it's early in the year. Sometimes it's in the middle of the year. Sometimes it's late. Leonard Fournette and Kareem Hunt, though, are two names. Leonard Fournette, a little less so through the, you know, the preseason, being tied to other teams. But are either of these veterans worth owning if you're a dynasty player?
If you're a dynasty player, I think they're worth owning if you want to stash them for depth, because they're probably, like you said, they're probably going to get picked up by somebody. Somebody's going to pick them up. They'll hit you, they'll keep you going in a stint if they get the like line share of touches or at least goal line carries. But again, I have a hard time finding like an historical preferences or references of times where this actually worked out well. We kind of mentioned D'Angelo Williams. I thought about Le'Veon when he went to Kansas City. Again, it didn't seem like that these guys near the end of their prime. I mean, Kareem's still only 28 years old. It could be a situation where he goes to the Colts, but he already went and worked out with them, and it didn't seem like they were really interested in going with him. He was going to go to the Saints, right? And then the Saints said, or he quit on the Saints just to go to the Colts because the Colts were going to give him more money, and then they backed out on him, which kind of scares me.
Yeah,
doesn't make me feel too comfortable. Kareem, since he's had some movement, I don't know. I don't feel very comfortable about either of these guys, other than with the assumption that they'll get potential starts if a team loses them. But in terms of dynasty, man, that's the only reason why you should be holding them. The fact that they're not on a team should give you zero confidence in their longevity. It's just easy as that. There's no numbers. There's no nothing. It's just like the team is not even like no team is holding them on a roster. We can't project literally anything because we don't know what team they're going to go to. If they go to it, a contender, it's probably a split backfield. So they're not going to get all the touches. It's very rare that these guys will go to a team and be relatively fantasy relevant. So again, I have concerns with them. I would hold on to them just to see if you can use it as trades against your other league mates, if they desperately need a running back, or if you desperately need a running back. And these guys potentially have some value of just sort of scoring some points. But I don't envision these guys being, you know, league winners or guys that you want to have long term. Because again, if they were worth something, these teams would be rostering them.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Dalvin Cook get paid. We saw Ezekiel Elliott get signed.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some questions around these two players. Now, we also don't know if the other end of the phone is Leonard Fournette going, I appreciate you calling and wanting me to work out. I'm going to wait a little later into the year and see what team needs me. I don't know. It's right. Fair to assume, though, that these guys want to play football, and if the money was there, they would do it. By the way, on Keep Trade Cut, Kareem Hunt is squeezed between Keontae Ingram and Michael Carter, running back 75. I had to go to the second page, by the way, to find these guys. And then if you scroll way down here, Leonard Fournette is the running back 93 between Bam Knight and Kevin Harris. So Leonard Fournette is way down there. He's a half a year older than Kareem Hunt, but he's been afforded a much larger volume many more times over than Kareem Hunt has. I think either of these guys, as you mentioned, they're not going to cost you much. Right now, they're probably going to cost you a third, maybe a really late second. I wouldn't give up a second for him, and I don't think anybody that's holding these guys would expect you to give up a second.
No.
They probably cost you a third while they're not on a roster, mid, late Definitely. Third. I think that's reasonable because that's such a gamble pick anyways. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, some people love third round picks. But I, short of being like really short on depth, I'm just not ultra interested in either of these guys. With that being said, though, I refuse to be surprised when running back X goes down, Josh Jacobs, and they call Leonard Fournette and, you know, Zamir White never sees the field. Like, that's entirely possible, right?
Entirely possible. Entirely possible. Yes. So
they only exist to be a dark cloud in someone's near-term future. So
those guys that you're deep sleepers, they're there to ruin your dreams with them. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They will crush the fourth running back on a roster's dreams quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Denver Broncos, Russell Wilson, mm-hmm. supposed to have a massive resurgence. He's been posting all these videos online, doing these unique workouts that look like they're going to pull his groin, but they don't, apparently, because he keeps doing them, or maybe they do and he likes it. I don't know. But the point is, he's been working out, getting himself in, air quote, the best shape of his life. He's got Sean Payton. We've got a difference in, oh, everything's different for him. And this was supposed to be the resurgence. But then he loses Jerry Jeudy for a multitude of weeks, a guy that you and I had pegged as a breakout player this year, a player that we thought that a lot of volume was going to be on his side to sort of usher its way through what we saw last year. Then today, this team that has no weapons cuts Albert O, by the way, one of the most athletic tight ends that we've seen in a number of years. He gets cut suddenly, which was strange, right? So now they're down to Cortland Sutton, some other names, and the player that we really want to talk about, which was the first player that Sean Payton took in the NFL draft as head coach of this team, and that's Marvin Mims. So with Jeudy missing time and Cortland Sutton being the de facto alpha at this point, are we excited about Marvin Mims and kind of what is his ceiling in this offense?
Very excited about him. You know, 5'11", 183, runs a 4.38, speedster, monster speedster. Player profiler has breakout age at 18.5. So he was good, age adjusted. Also his last 2 years at Oklahoma, he averaged over 20 yards per, reception. So he's catching the ball, deep. And so he, all those splash plays, he's got that capability in his skill set. And then he goes to Sean Payton, who, you know, is an offensive guru. And again, the target competition is not there. It's just Cortland Sutton and maybe these running backs. But yeah, they also got rid of Albert O. And I don't know. And they got Greg Dulcich in there. So he's no slouch. He's pretty good, up and coming. But in terms of the receiver room and all that, yeah, he's got a great opportunity to kind of capitalize. And again, he's got second round draft capital. Like you said, first pick that Sean Payton has made. Some other stats, like he was among Power 5 run wide receivers within this class outside of JSN. He was like first in career yards per route run. And so he's an electric player. Doesn't have like monster receiving production that you would like, but I think there is some use for him. Cortland Sutton's not he's a deep contested catch guy, but if you got want some guy to burn the defense, I think this is someone that Sean Payton can kind of move all over the place. I didn't get a chance to look at what his usage, if he was exclusively outside, inside, but I think someone like this with the speed, and he can play on both inside and outside because he's got the speed. So I think this guy could easily, you know, go toe to toe with Cortland Sutton. And then who knows how long this hamstring injury is going to linger for our boy Jerry Jeudy that we made that video about. So.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, to add a couple of things here. Number one, last year in 15 games, Russell Wilson was number one in the NFL in deep ball pass attempts at 87. In 15 games, and that was without the new head coach and OC that we're going to go with here. And I want to mention, because before I get into Mims, I wanted to bring up Sean Payton. Now, I have always attributed the pass-centric game plan that the New Orleans Saints had with the OC Pete Carmichael that has been there for, I think, like 12 consecutive years or something like that. Because I think he had a stretch of six consecutive seasons where the Saints were top four or better in overall pass attempts. But even before Carmichael, Sean Payton had Doug Marrone as his OC. And in the 3 years that Marrone was the OC for Sean Payton, he finished fifth, first, and first in overall pass attempts. So Sean Payton has been the straw that stirs the drink in overall pass attempts. And now you bring in Joe Lombardi, who in his 3 years as an OC has finished ninth, third, and second, coming off his time with Justin Herbert. So you put together two mega pass throwing machines, and you factor in that Russ has never really been able to cook, but now he's in a division that's full of shootouts. This is a team with a top 10 most difficult strength of schedule. Their running back, who they don't have a ton of depth behind, is coming off a fairly significant injury and a layoff that could hinder his ability to rush efficiently. And again, you pair together a head coach and an OC that throw the ball more than anybody in history as a combination, and we just might get an electric combination between the guy that was already tops in the league in deep ball pass attempts. But to kind of double down on some of the statements you made, when we look at Marvin Mims back in college, yes, his hallmark was the deep ball. He was the wide receiver 3 overall in all of college football in deep receiving yards. And then we look at what Mims was when we set a minimum threshold of 10 deep targets, top 6 in deep target rate in all of college football at 35.7%, top 5 in average depth of target, top 3 in yards per route run, top 6 in yards after the catch per reception, and top 20 in quarterback rating when targeted deep. I mean, there's not a thing about his profile when you pair the coaching situation, the passing situation, the historical accuracy from Russell Wilson, and now he's doing all these funky workouts. I mean, how can you root against the man? Like, yes, we lost Jerry Jeudy, but we gained Marvin Mims. And RIP to Tim Patrick. I should say that. I didn't mention him at the top, but Tim Patrick at age 30, whatever, was apparently a runaway freight train yet again in the preseason and was the best receiver in the room or whatever we keep hearing. But nonetheless, I'm excited about Marvin Mims. Clearly, you're excited about Marvin Mims. And this pairing could be quite amazing.
And there's one guy that he kind of looks like. He doesn't have the dominator, but there's a Saints receiver that got drafted in the first round a few years ago. That's 5'10", 189, oh. Got elite speed.
Oh,
kind of looks like Brandon Cooks.
Oh, look at that. I like
it. If you look at Brandon Cooks, only had 550 yards receiving, but he also had other receivers to go against in that offense. This is kind of a player that it looks like, you know, Sean Payton values. And yeah, they're very similar players outside of the college dominator.
Yeah, that's a great comp. I think that's why you listen to this show, okay? Because that's the kind of juice that you needed to get you up in the morning, to get you rolling, to get you fired up.
Get fired up about that. Yeah.
Got to get your hands on Marvin Mims.
Hell yeah. You can get Marvin Mims.
It's entirely possible.
It is. The speed's there. But, you know, Brandon Cooks is a pretty special player, obviously.
Yes.
I'm not saying he's toe-to-toe and he's not going to have – I'm not saying he's going to have five, you know, what is that, 4 back-to-back.
Yeah, prolific college career as well.
Yeah, prolific college career. Mims doesn't have that. But if returns of, like, the archetype kind of fits that kind of Brandon Cooks role that maybe he could be. I don't know if he's that caliber, but similar.
Yeah. No, it's a great comp. Love it. Brought up Cooks here. I mean, Cooks has been one of the most underappreciated players in the last decade, literally, that I can remember. Yes. And on top of those multitude of 1,000-yard seasons, there's at least 4 in there where he did it the first year that he played with a new quarterback, which is even more impressive from Brandon Cooks. Okay. Now, the crescendo of the episode, the topic that you and I really wanted to get to, and because I think this is a very interesting one based on where he's currently valued on Keep Trade Cut, and I'm going to ask it framed in such a way as, are you nervous about Rashad White in Dynasty?
Somewhat. I would say I'm concerned. Number one, everyone's concerned. The Buccaneers, you know, they got Baker Mayfield there. They just lost their center to season-ending IR. I can go on later here in a second about what I love about Rashad White, but yeah, they already had the 20th ranked offensive line. You know, Sean Tucker, who only went undrafted because of his injury, looks to have get some looks at splitting first team reps. But I think he's valued properly here right now, just because of the fact that we can pull it up here. I just think, you know, he could potentially, he should, from all the accounts coming out of camp, he could have like the lion's share of the backfield. But obviously Sean Tucker is concerning. That makes me nervous. The offensive efficiency makes you nervous. In 2022, teams that had bad blocking units, so they're like 20th, and they just lost their center, so just drop them down that list. Bad blocking units accounted for 0.2 points per play, while good blocking units accounted for 1.2 points per play. So he's losing a full point per play, which is concerning. But what's positive is he's a fantastic receiving back. The other crazy part that I don't think anyone's really talking about is the fact that now he's 220 pounds and plans to be between 220 and 225. But yeah, I'm still nervous. I think the offenses with Baker Mayfield is questionable, but they do have good weapons. But again, the offensive line, if the offensive line's not that great, he could make up in the passing game. The size to me is a positive because it means that he's trying to get better at in between the tackles, which he was already at 3.5 yards per carry, which was the concern from his last year's profile. But I love the player, but yeah, there's a lot to be nervous about in terms of where he's going to go.
Well, couple things to say here. Number one, and we could bring up his profile over here. Well, okay, first off, the real crux of this argument is the fact that he's currently valued as the RB21. Now, last night he was the RB24 when I was looking at this, but that's how fast the people in this market move, okay? That's how fast
maybe they move. Maybe they found out the weight too, and I saw how big he is. I didn't realize how big he was because he was a slender 210, so I was worried about him in between the tackles.
They heard that he gained weight, then they heard that they lost their elite center, and then they made him. He went up in the rankings.
Clearly,
the dynasty community. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
So
yeah,
So he's the RB21. He was RB24. He was closer. He was literally between Miles Sanders and Alexander Mattison the other day, which to me, that's like a no brainer. There's an absolute no brainer.
Exactly.
At that point, is it a brainer in his current location? I mean, okay, so Joe Mixon, I think we have questions about the efficiency potential. Where is he going to be beyond this season? Is he in the plans? And then above him, you have Zach Charbonnet, a player that you and I both like, but we also know that if Kenneth Walker is healthy, best case scenario for him is he wins that gig a little bit and maybe he's the 57% snap share guy, but never the full workload. Rashad White, on the other hand, in the context of this offense, could absolutely be the guy. And one thing I want to say is you brought up some of his numbers. Right here is a big one to me. Average defenders in the box last year, he was number 17. So with Tom Brady, he was seeing a lot of extra defenders in the box. Now you've got Baker Mayfield, who is not a threat to anyone except himself.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's a necessarily a benefit to him. With that being said, though, some of the stuff that to me really stood out about Rashad White is kind of what we saw from him from a production standpoint last year in small samples and really what we got out of him coming out of college. Because coming out of college, if you sorted that 2021 class, 2021. Yeah, so 2021 class, top 20 in yards created after contact at 3.38, number one in the country in yards per route run at 2.25, and top 20 elusive rating on Pro Football Focus overall. So he's a guy, you mentioned this, the bigger he is, the better his odds are being able to break tackles. There's a chance that this is very like Alvin Kamara-esque. Like that could be, right? Like that's kind of where we hope the line trends. We hope...
Exactly.
That he becomes the all-terrain, tackle-breaking, pass-catching, goal-line hogging. Nobody else can even get a breath of air in the room because he's absorbed all the oxygen. Like, that's what you hope out of him. He is a little older, but that's because he came into the league a little older. But the upside at his current cost is pretty unreal.
It's unreal. It's yeah. If go back to that list, the list is just incredible. Like, just go through the list and tell me which one you would rather have. The only one would the maybe Charbonnet.
I mean, upside for upside.
You got. I mean, Dobbins. He's limited because even if he is healthy, they don't pass the running back enough, and he has again. Just talk about his injury history. He hasn't been able to see the field, and James Cook. Maybe I think again he's sort of in that similar situation, except he's got a better offense that he's on. So that's kind of the line there. And then Derrick Henry is just historic. So
go even further, because if Rashad White opens the year with 3 17-point games and Javonte looks like the player we think he might look like, why wouldn't you say I prefer Rashad White to Javonte Williams? Like, there's nothing crazy about that at all, because Javonte is still running on the fumes of hopes and dreams of the last time we saw him in this crazy ascension that he was afforded, even though the sample was not very big. So, like, I could see, and look, a lot of people are willing to already write off Najee Harris. Like, if Najee starts not playing well and Jaylen Warren's getting some opportunity, like, if Rashad White's playing well, not crazy to think that Rashad White ends up in this tier of guys up here where we're looking at Ramondre, who the Patriots never extend running backs, yet to be seen what'll happen there. Najee, people are already saying that they're jumping ship on him. Javonte coming off of injury. Damian Pierce, fourth-round guy that we love, but he's a fourth-round guy. Derrick Henry is at the very tail end of his career, we think, or he's got another. He's either going to fall off this year or play 10 more years. And then we've got James Cook, who's not big enough to do what Rashad White can do. J.K. Dobbins is always hurt. Like, you could legitimately move him into the top 13 or higher when we run the analysis of Eckler becoming 29 and some of these other guys are aging out and injuries and whatever. So ceiling for ceiling, he's pretty much within this range and age and opportunity unrivaled, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Is like Cam Akers like one of the only kind of names, but even then I don't think he has the appeal of Rashad White, who by the way, for better or worse, is getting a quarterback upgrade in 2024. Right.
Yeah. No, he is. He has to at this point. Yeah. So
he's either getting Drake May or they're getting some veteran who's better than Baker Mayfield.
So then all of a sudden you get Caleb Williams or Drake May. I mean, then through the roof, he's going to skyrocket all these guys, all these lists right here. Because number one, they're just going to run the ball like crazy with whoever they get in their rookie year. And God, he could jump that list. So
I sorted the picks in just for just for conversational piece here. So we've got where'd he go? Okay, so Rashad White is right here. He's bordering on a late 25 first. He's a little less valuable than that. But look at this. Early 2023 third on here is about 3350 in total points. Rashad White is 3773. So you're telling me that he's at the equivalent value, and you can't sell a 23rd pick anymore because obviously that's all done. But he was essentially being valued as a second-round pick. So, like, he's Roshan. It's either Roshan or Rashad White. I like Roshan. But, dude, the upside, if you're a team that wants to take a swing on a second-round pick, and I will gamble second-round picks all day long, especially on running backs, right? So you're just doing it laterally on a guy with more potential upside. That seems like a no-brainer to me. I would have taken him.
Given anybody listening, they should just be going to try to trade a second-round pick.
Devon Achane right now for Rashad White, straight up. I have no question.
Easily.
Yeah. Injuries can obviously falter this analysis.
Absolutely.
But again, we're talking about in Achane's case, 188-pound guy versus a guy that's now in the 120 or the 220 range. Like, it's a non-starter. And the other thing is Achane's buried. Believe it or not, the other two running backs in front of him will end up with a substantial level of opportunity. And we don't even know if Jonathan Taylor doesn't end up there anyways in the future and just ruin everything. So with that being said, there are an immense amount of reasons why the downside for Rashad White needs to be taken into account when you look at some of the inefficiency last year and the people that are citing the targets are also not attributing it to the fact that Tom Brady's been, first off, he threw like 711 times last year, and they're not attributing the history of Tom Brady and the running back correlation of target share. With that being said, though, when we're playing a game where upside and trying to bet on potential outcome is everything, this is the profile. Like Rashad White to Alvin Kamara, he's somewhere between the what Antonio Gibson, what we had hoped he could potentially be, or on the most extreme elite version would be like the Alvin Kamara. Because I think that's probably the closer range of outcomes at his ceiling. He doesn't have quite the juice of Gibson. Gibson's in a very rare air. I don't even know where you put, I mean, he's in that Barkley plus range. I don't even know, but
yeah, the talents, the talent and the athleticism, he already had the size and the size adjusted speed. He had to gain weight. We don't know if that impacts how he plays, and he plays slower or something like that. It impacts him in the receiving game or some sort of way. We don't know how much the weight impacts. We were talking about this before. Usually, I was like, how much does weight actually, like adding weight, we know losing weight always helps guys and they look a little faster and stuff like that. Like Le'Veon Bell type situation where he lost a bunch of weight and he, you know, looked crazy explosive when during that stint on the Steelers. But yeah, it could be. But again, the talent and the price is insane. There are a lot of concerns, but for that price, I'm willing to make a bet, especially for if it's a second round pick, that's all he's going for.
Yeah. And he's signed through 2025. So you got him in 2023, 2024, 2025. You got a lot of years left on him. And in the new era of football, especially dynasty, length of duration remaining on a contract is a very important factor. Especially as I mentioned at the top of this show, future proof, forecasting, contracts. Just remember that. It's going to come back up in the future. All right, Alexander. I think that this was it was only five topics, but I felt like it was a beefy episode nonetheless. Everybody, appreciate you guys listening. Share this with your friends. Help blow this show up. You guys can also find this video on YouTube. Please go over there. Check that out. Subscribe to the channel. I've got to do some changing around of the names, but for now, it's still at youtube.com/NateList. Go to dynastyrankings.com, pop your email in there. I think we'll plan to do something really cool for the first so many people that sign up, and we'll drop some information in an email in the future. Description below, or whether you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening on one of the platforms, join the Discord. Again, as Alexander mentioned earlier, it's always very lively in there. It's a fun group. It's a great community. I love interacting with them. I feel like I know these guys personally, and hopefully I get to run into them at the expo or something in the future. Yeah, and I can't think if I'm missing anything else trying to plug away everything there. But again, thank you guys so much for listening. Alexander, once again, A-plus analysis. And as this show evolves, again, guys, you're going to hear some really unique stats being thrown your direction. And we've got a lot more cool stuff to roll out in the future. We're really excited to make some announcements. But little by little, just like eating an elephant, I think. I've never eaten one, but I've been told that's how you're supposed to do it. Don't take big bites. Anyways, appreciate you guys checking out. And look for the next podcast that'll drop this week, which will be Sunday AM, the Future Proof Podcast, which again, very dynasty strategy, sleeper tool centric show. A lot of fun. So we've got some cool topics already queued up for that. So anyways, we'll see you guys later in the week.